Good afternoon, everyone. We'll now hear appeal number 22-1976, Amanda Pernier Light versus Montrell Hobbs. Mr. Monroe, I see, can you hear us okay?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, you can start whenever you're ready.
All right, thank you. So, John Monroe for the appellant, Amanda Pernier Light, Your Honors. Ms. Litke was arrested for disorderly conduct in Milwaukee County on account of carrying a rifle. Wisconsin law declares that that the mere carrying of a firearm does not constitute disorderly conduct. And there's no dispute that Ms. Litke was carrying a rifle, and that's the reason for her arrest. Now, the rifle was affixed with a bayonet, and the deputies argue that the bayonet somehow changed the calculus so that the device was not a firearm or was more than a firearm or something like that. The district court speculated that perhaps it was something more than a firearm because of the bayonet, and there was some discussion in the district court about whether the bayonet constituted a knife, which Wisconsin law also declares carrying not to be disorderly conduct. But the fact remains, it was a firearm. She was carrying a rifle. And it can't be that the features of the firearm, the rifle in this case, somehow change the fact that Wisconsin law declares carrying a firearm not to be disorderly conduct. As we stated in our brief.
Mr. Monroe, can I ask you a question? Do we need to consider the totality of the circumstances here? Because it wasn't just a rifle. The conduct was odd, to say the least. Okay, she was carrying a rifle with a long bayonet attached. She had handcuffs attached to her belt. I think she had a handgun, at least one handgun, on her person that was visible to everybody. And she walked into a park and I think sat down on a bench near a baseball field. And was she smoking a cigarette or something along those lines when the officers approached her?
She was sitting on the bench. This was during COVID, just so you know. She was out exercising, basically. She sat on a bench. She was playing Pokemon Go on a phone and was smoking a cigarette.
Well, that's what she said.
I'm sorry?
She said she was playing Pokemon Go, right? But the police officer said that was impossible. I don't know how to play Pokemon Go, okay? So, but all I know is the record that they said she couldn't do it.
I don't know how to play it either, Your Honor, but I think what the testimony was that she was playing it, and then when the officers approached her, she had to stop playing it in order to record the interaction with them. So
okay.
I don't think they actually demonstrated she was never playing it. What she was saying was that she was playing the game, but that was impossible to play the game and record. And then she started recording when she was approached by the officers. But in answer to your question, Judge Kirsch, the totality of the circumstances are she was carrying a rifle. It was on a sling on her back, had a bayonet. She was wearing her duty belt because she has her job is being a security guard. So she was wearing her garb for getting ready to go to work. So I don't know that the totality of the circumstances really change much. Really, the only thing that the people who called 911 said was they saw a person with a rifle.
What should the police have done? What should the police have done under the circumstances? I mean, it seems to me she kind of wanted to be arrested. I mean, I'm just reading between the lines here. She got armed, significantly armed, walked into a park and sat down on a Sunday afternoon where she would certainly draw attention. And what should the police have done?
So, I mean, the report was there's a person in the park with a rifle. I guess one thing they could do is nothing, because I don't know that they necessarily need to respond to a call like there's a person with a rifle, given that there was no report that she was doing anything with it. But if they choose to respond, which they certainly can, they can come talk to her and basically do, I guess I'd call it maybe a Terry stop light, just to make sure there's nothing untoward going on. They did have an interview with her, and at that point, she wasn't under arrest until she was, surrounded, and they told her to put down her stuff, and they took her firearms and everything. So I don't think there would have been a problem with the officers just interviewing her to see what was going on and make sure there wasn't anything going on that shouldn't have been, that she basically, they didn't have any reason to believe that she had committed, was committing, or was about to commit a crime, because she was just sitting there. Well, and the law was...
I certainly take your view there. They could have just done the interview and let well enough alone. But do you acknowledge our precedent that you noted in the brief that the only calls they got were, there's a woman out here with a rifle, not a woman out here with a rifle with a bayonet. They ultimately choose to arrest her because of the bayonet. Do you acknowledge our precedent that what the officers find as probable cause doesn't have to be what they initially approached an arrestee or a suspect about?
I agree with that, Judge Jackson Akiwumi. She whatever they arrest her for, what they state, like in their deposition, the reason for the arrest, that doesn't matter. But they must have probable cause. So yes, I agree with that precedent. And I would like to reserve the remainder of my time, Your Honor.
Okay, Mr. Stadler.
May it please the court, my name is Ron Stadler, and I represent the two defendants in this case, Sergeant Gladney and Deputy Hobbs, both of whom are employed by the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Department. The one thing I was always taught in regard to looking at a case is to start with defining the issue. And I think that's the biggest thing to remember in this case is, what are we arguing about? And the briefs, to a lot of extent, argue about knives and bayonets and all of this stuff, but this is a qualified immunity case. That's the issue. Are these officers entitled to qualified immunity? And nobody's been debating as to what qualified immunity means, because we all know what it means. But I think the more we hear the plaintiff argue about whether this is or isn't a knife, or whether a bayonet is a bayonet or a bayonet is a rifle, the more we argue about the merits of that issue only serves to reinforce what the district court found, and that is these officers are entitled to qualified immunity because they had to make a decision in the field about whether they had probable cause to arrest this person. And the decision they were faced with was, we have a woman here, and to use your word, Judge Kirsch, presented oddly. She has not only a big Soviet assault rifle strapped to her back, but it's got this bayonet on it. And as the courts have pointed out in some of the decisions like Gonzalez, our officers are not in the field with briefs and Lexis and Westlaw, and they're not able to look up the law and say, oh, bayonet, is that a knife, is it not? We have to look at it in terms of what would a reasonable officer do in a situation like this. And also going back to something you touched upon, Judge, is the issue of context. It all has to be looked at through the lens of context. It's a warm, sunny Sunday afternoon. It's the first Sunday of really our COVID pandemic, and all of the public places in the world are closed down. So where do we find people on a warm Sunday in April in Wisconsin? In Rainbow Park. And I think Ms. Litke did want to be arrested. And she's got a history and a pattern of it. There's published cases that talk about her previous arrests. The first thing she did when the police officers told her they were going to arrest her was, well, have you read about this other case where this guy in West Dallas was doing this? And he got summary judgment on his Section 1983 claim. She went there looking for a fight. But these officers were faced with these particular circumstances, and it wasn't that they arrested her because she had a rifle. And Mr. Monroe says that that's the issue here and nobody disputes it. Well, I'm standing here to tell you we do dispute that, because the two defendants in this case, when they were deposed, both were asked, why was it that you arrested her? And they both said, because of the bayonet. And there's body camera footage that I believe the court has seen where the sergeant goes up to her and says, you got a bayonet here on your rifle, and this is unacceptable. So I would agree with Mr. Monroe. If this was a Sunday afternoon and she's there and she's got her Glock 9mm on her hip and she's got her Mosin Nagant on her shoulder, you really can't arrest her for disorderly conduct. But when you take context and you take that bayonet and you strap that bayonet onto that rifle, it's a different context. And those officers had probable cause at that point in time then to believe that she was engaged in disorderly conduct. I guarantee you Ms. Litke did not bolt a bayonet onto her rifle because she was afraid of coyotes. And that's why she said she had a gun with her, is she was afraid of coyotes in the park. Coyotes are also nocturnal animals. This is during the middle of the day. So, I mean, her whole story doesn't hold up. But when we look at all of those facts and put all of those facts together and go back to the issue of, do these officers have qualified immunity for the decision that they made? Judge Stattmuller was absolutely correct on it. And I think the argument we've laid out in our brief shows that we're absolutely correct on it as well. These officers are entitled to qualified immunity because they were asked to make a decision about an entirely unsettled area of the law. And I think that takes me to the second thing that I've always been taught about looking at a case, and that is, let's talk about the burden of proof.
Before we go there, does that mean that officers now need courts to rule on every slight different modification someone might make to a firearm in a jurisdiction whose legislature has very clearly signaled that they want to expand gun rights? You know, this is a very expansive open carry statute that we're looking at. And so in this case, you're saying, well, you know, they haven't ruled on bayonets, so how could the cops have known? I mean, where does this end anytime somebody makes some other slight modification to a gun? Because I take Mr. Monroe's point that a rifle with a bayonet is still a rifle.
Let me address it this way, and I think it's a very good question, and it's one that I've thought about quite a bit. To begin with, what Mr. Monroe describes as modifications to a rifle, he says, well, if I put a different magazine on it, if I put a different stock on it, if I put a flash suppressor on it, those aren't items of destruction. So the fact that somebody puts a different stock on their gun, the fact that somebody puts a folding stock on it, they put a scope on it, we don't have to worry about any of those things. They're not adding a weapon that is a weapon in and of itself. And so, thinking of your question, I sat there today thinking, you know, what is this like? What other things do you think would amount to adding something onto a rifle that really create a new category onto themselves? And I came up with two other ideas. One is, I think if somebody puts a scope on a rifle, it's not changing anything, and no one's going to go and kill you with a scope. But you know what else I can do with a rifle? I can mount a grenade launcher on it. And a grenade launcher is a weapon in and of itself, and it will launch a grenade at people. And I think that would scare the heck out of people if they saw me standing in the park with a grenade launcher. And then I thought, you know, I should do just a quick Google search and see what else can I put on an AR-15 that would be a weapon in and of itself, like a bayonet, that could be used to kill people. And the other thing that came up in my Google search was a flamethrower. And to me, that sounds like I'm stretching the bounds of reason, but you can legally buy a flamethrower and mount that onto your gun. So I think if you put a bayonet on your gun, you put a grenade launcher on your gun, you put a flamethrower on your gun, you are presenting yourself entirely different to the world than somebody who is standing there with just a rifle with a new scope on it, or with a folding stock or a bump stock or whatever it is that we want to do to modify that rifle. So it's one thing to modify a rifle. It's an entirely different thing to take another weapon and mount it on that and present yourself to the world, because that does have a tendency to cause people to be disturbed and concerned and to fear for their safety. Nobody's going to fear for their safety because you put a new stock on your rifle. But you put a flamethrower on your rifle or you put a bayonet on your rifle, it will scare people. And Sergeant Gladney said that. He said, I think that rifle as it presented with that bayonet on it would scare the average person. I mean, a bayonet has one purpose. That's to poke holes in the human body. It is designed to maim and kill. And that's what's scary about it. So I hope that that answers your question, Judge, because I think that is the difference here is you have to look at kind of the context of what's being modified or what's being added. It's not going to be that every time we change everything on it, we have to deal with it. But on the other hand, you know, I searched all over. How many bayonet cases could I find across the country? None. Couldn't find anything that talked about, maybe there was one or two criminal cases where somebody stabbed somebody with a bayonet. But, you know, these officers had no guidance on this issue. And that's my point of the more we sit up here and argue about the merits of it, the more it points to them, and that is that they have to make this decision in the field without the benefit of what we have. And just last point, burden of proof. It was not our burden of proof to show that the law was well established. That belongs to Mr. Monroe and Ms. Litke, and they did not carry that burden of proof. They were never able to identify that the law was clearly established and should have led these deputies to a different decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stadler. Mr. Monroe.
Yes, just a couple of points in a rebuttal. Mr. Stadler mentioned the Gonzalez case, and I should point out that the Gonzalez case predated Wisconsin enacting the exception that we're talking about here, and I think it was enacted in the wake of Gonzalez on purpose, because Mr. Gonzalez, and that was my case, the Gonzalez case, Mr. Gonzalez was arrested in Walmart for and in Menards because he had a handgun on his belt. He was arrested for disorderly conduct because of that. And the ultimate decision from this court was, well, the law wasn't clearly established that that wasn't disorderly conduct. So the Wisconsin legislature changed the law to say, all right, well, carrying a firearm is just plain not disorderly conduct, so we don't need to worry about that anymore. And here we are worrying about it again. Mr. Stadler talked about different things you could do to a firearm. I get his point, but the thing is, that's not what the law says. Mr. Stadler says, well, his clients aren't going to arrest somebody for putting a scope on a rifle or putting a stock on a rifle or a flash suppressor, but we don't know for sure that his clients aren't going to, but we certainly don't know that no other officers in Wisconsin are going to arrest somebody for that. And if this court determines that, well, putting a bayonet crosses the line, but a stock wouldn't, well, how are we going to know then with the next case how much you can modify your firearm? And I should point out, we're talking about a Mosin Nagant is essentially an antique battle rifle. And it's still an effective rifle, of course. Somebody could be shot at several hundred yards with that. The bayonet doesn't make it more effective. If you're going to actually use the bayonet as a weapon, it's a close quarters combat kind of thing. It doesn't make the rifle more effective. It basically is no longer a rifle if you're using the bayonet. Now you've turned it into a spear or something like that.
Mr. Monroe,
it's not really in the same.
Mr. Yes. Monroe, have you provided us with any analogous case, much less a controlling case, from prior to 2020? Where you have this situation intersecting with a disorderly conduct arrest?
I have not.
That's right. And then, and we're in qualified immunity land, aren't we, Mr. Monroe?
We are. I mean, that's what the defendants are claiming. But they at least have to show that there was probable cause. And our point is, you don't have to have an analogous case when you've got a statute saying this is what the crime is, and the elements of the crime aren't there. They went outside the statute and arrested Ms. Pierner-Litke for something that Wisconsin law says is not a crime.
Are you sure that Wisconsin is so clear on this area?
I am. The statute says carrying or going armed with a firearm is not disorderly conduct. And that's what she was doing. And Mr. Sadler says, well, if she'd have just had a rifle and a handgun, that would be okay. But the bayonet somehow takes it out of that. I don't know where that comes from, other than, you know, that's very subjective to say, it's all right if she carries a rifle, but for some reason she can't have a bayonet on the rifle. Again, what other features can't you have on the rifle if you can't have a bayonet? Thank you, Your Honors. I'll yield the rest of my time and would urge you to reverse.
Thank you, Mr. Moreau. And thank you, counsel. The court will be in recess until tomorrow morning.